This is the Reynolds School Media Watch on Beyond the Headlines. I'm KUNR General Manager David Stipik with Al Stavitsky, Dean of the Journalism School here at the University of Nevada, Reno. Welcome, Al.
Always a pleasure, David.
And now, Al, last week the J School hosted a very special guest, and I had the opportunity to spend some time with him and interview him at length, and we're going to air that interview in just a moment. But first, I've invited you over to the studio today to help set the stage. Hugo Morales is the new Reynolds School Diversity Fellow in Residence, and he has a fascinating story, as we're going to hear in just a moment. But first, Al, what is the Diversity Fellow in Residence to begin with?
Well, this is a new program, David, that we launched to expose students to issues of diversity and equity in communication. And we have many guest speakers who come in, visit a class, maybe give a talk, and they fly in and they fly out. So we decided that we needed a program where somebody would spend a couple of days, a week, maybe longer on our campus and really engage not only with students in classes, but with community members, with the journalistic community, and really help illuminate these issues of diversity that are so central to everything we're doing these days in such a multicultural place as Nevada. We got the generous support of the Charles H. Stout Foundation and the McClatchy Company Foundation that enabled us to run this program. And the natural first fellow for us was Hugo Morales of Radio Bilingue. And as you got to experience during his visit, he really is a remarkable broadcaster who has devoted his entire professional life to giving voice to underserved communities.
So what were some of the activities that Hugo Morales was involved with the students, with faculty? What was the response as well?
It was just a marvelous, impactful experience on campus. He spoke in classes. He delivered our monthly Center for Advanced Media Studies talk. He met with leaders from the local Latino community. He met with Latino journalists in town. He had pizza and conversation with students of color from not just the Reynolds School, but all across the university. He had a meeting with our faculty to talk about ways that we can continue to infuse considerations of diversity in our curriculum, in our programming. He met with the Provost Carmen. One other thing that we did was we recorded an interview with Hugo in Spanish, hosted by our bilingual faculty member, Vanessa Van Coor. And this was an interview on the history of Radio Bilingue and of Latino community radio in general. And we'll make this video in Spanish available on our website and share it widely.
Well, thanks again for the background information. Al Stavitsky, Dean of the Journalism School here at the university. Now let's go ahead and listen to the interview that we recorded last week. I'm David Stipik in the KUNR studios, joined by the Diversity Fellow in Residence from the Reynolds School of Journalism. It's Hugo Morales, co-founder and executive director of Radio Bilingue, the National Latino Public Radio Network. Welcome to our campus and to Reno Public Radio.
Well, it's an honor to be here. The university has been incredibly generous to me, and I feel extremely honored to be receive this fellowship and recognition. It's just wonderful.
We'll talk a little bit about the network here in just a moment, but we were starting to talk before I opened the mic about the campus here. You feel like you're having fun on our campus this week?
Oh, definitely. The dean has been incredibly generous in, taking me around to different classes and talking to different students, and it's just been a real joy to be able to tell the story and value of Latino community radio.
You're a co-founder of Radio Bilingue, the National Latino Public Radio Network that's headquartered in Fresno and Oakland. It has 12 stations in California, Texas, Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico, plus more than 80 satellite affiliates in the Northern Hemisphere and growing. For our listeners who aren't familiar with it, what is Radio Bilingue?
Well, Radio Bilingue is a public radio network that targets the Latino community, and it's a nonprofit, California nonprofit, that owns the licenses of 12 stations, but the board is Latino, and our staff predominantly is Latino, and we broadcast in Spanish, English, and in Mixteco, which is a Native American language from indigenous people like myself from southern Mexico, between Mexico City and Guatemala, and also another language called Triqui from the same region, and then another language, which is Hmong, which is of Southeast Asians who have settled in the Central Valley in California.
And Hugo, what is the mission of Radio Bilingüe?
Our mission is to empower Latinos and to empower other disenfranchised communities. That's our mission.
So how does one radio network serve the various languages and cultures of all your audiences?
Radio Bilingüe is a good example of block programming because, you know, the Latino community is not homogeneous. It's as opposed to maybe some other people may feel differently. It's actually quite diverse. I, as a founder, co-founder, back in, we went on the air in 1980, July 4th, 1980, decided to focus on some of the, not all, but some of the largest segments of our community as defined by musical tastes. Because it's interesting how the musical taste is somehow connected to geography and also to history of that segment. And also through socioeconomic challenges. Very interesting. And so, and sometimes race. And so, therefore, what we're doing is during the weekdays, we open up with music that is to the taste of mixed race, native, and usually Spaniard. So we have mariachis. And then we have a national talk show, Línea Abierta, from 12 to 1. So it's like Talk of the Nation, as formerly, but in Spanish. And then we broadcast news from produced by the equivalent of NPR from Mexico City, Radio Educación, public radio. We have Norteño music from northern Mexico. And then we go into music that has its roots in Black Latino America. So we have salsa, merengue, etc., Cuban music.
Amazing.
Beautiful music, thanks to the Black community. From about 7 to 9, we have usually some more younger demo music like, Rock en Español and you know, music like that. And then repeat of Línea Abierta, the national talk show. 10 to 3 a.m., oldies but goodies. It's rhythm and blues in English. But our programmers managed to get the appropriate rhythm and blues in English that are the favorites of the Mexican-American, disenfranchised, alienated youth and adults, many of them in prison or in the prison track.
And this is Beyond the Headlines on KUNR with the Reynolds School Media Watch. I'm David Stipik. I'm visiting with a guest on campus, the Reynolds School of Journalism's Diversity Fellow in Residence for this week. Hugo Morales is co-founder and executive director of Radio Bilingüe. It's the National Latino Public Radio Network. Now, I can see where music would be something that might cross over from culture to culture more easily, but you're talking about also some talk programs, other things. Give me a little sense of the logistical challenge that creates in terms of staffing, in terms of talent, in terms of hiring, program, content. What does that do to create that type of block programming like you described?
For the block programming, we literally train people from the community of that demo because otherwise the employment pool or the engagement pool is just not there. So, for example, we will literally recruit farm workers. You get a farm worker from South Texas, get on the mic, and play her favorite music. And so that accent, that delivery, I mean, that taste of Tejano is just like contagious. And so there's a real flavor to that. So that's what we do. You know, we get a live curandera. You know what a curandera is?
No, I don't.
Somebody who heals with herbs.
Okay.
Which is a tradition among us native. I'm a Mixtec myself, native, indigenous. So we have somebody who speaks Mixteco, our language, get on the air and talk about our traditions, including herbs, and also talks about staying healthy and eating traditional foods, and at the same time plays your music that no other radio or TV station will play. And, you know, and like legitimizes it by being on the radio. And so you have incredible numbers of Mixtecs tuning in. There's some surveys that suggest that 80% of our people in some of these farm worker communities and in Oaxaca are tuning in. Because even in Oaxaca, there's no independent radio for ourselves, for Mixtecos. But coming from the U.S., they get to be on the radio. So we need to train people. And so that's how we get those voices on. And I just want to say that it's really teamwork. Maybe okay. It's just not right. myself. You know, right. just like with yourself here, I'm not sure. I'm sure you're not on the air all the time.
No. Small team, but it definitely takes a team.
It's a team. And so, yeah. And so therefore, in our case, it's a real challenge, too, because we need a team. And so how do you train people to do something that you cannot just, you know, how would I say, borrow from another NPR
right.
or public radio? They're not there.
All right, you're a MacArthur Foundation Fellow in 1999. You were also awarded the public broadcasting's highest honor, the Edward R. Murrow Award. Long list of honors and achievements for you in your storied career. But you began with very meager beginnings. Out of that, you eventually went on to Harvard and Harvard Law School, and then co-founding the Global Radio Network that we're talking about. Give us just a little glimpse of your story. What is it that brought you from there to here, and what do you attribute that to?
So basically, you know, I'm an indigenous person, Mixteco. There's about 2.5 million of us. And so like many Native Americans here in the Americas, we're poor. We're disenfranchised. I don't need to go through the story. I think we're familiar with that story. And so I'm just want to make sure that our audience realizes that I'm just one of them. In other words, I am a Native. And so what happened is I'm also a typical immigrant from Mexico in the sense that when I was, 1 year old, my father left and he came to the United States as an undocumented worker wanting to get a job and sustain our family. And that's so typical of many immigrants, you know, millions that come to the U.S. And so I didn't know my father till I was 9 when, I eventually was brought legally here to the United States. So I was raised by my mother, a single mom, and so she used to weave hats to feed us because my father rarely got a job and not only that, but he was paid, 90 cents an hour, whatever. And then only seasonally as a farm worker. So very unreliable income. So that's how I was raised. And I went to, so I started school when I was 2, 2.5, and so I was lucky to get a good education in Mexico because Mexico has a high illiteracy rate. So it has focused on teaching the ABCs very early. So therefore, I was really lucky to learn how to read and write into math maybe when I was 4 years old or 5 years old because I was able to go to kindergarten in first grade, and that's all I needed. But, you know, so then I came when I was third grade. So I came here legally by then because my father had legalized. So I went to public schools and learned English on the fly. I was not ever taught English. So I went to public schools, but I came, my parents, the poor, were community organizers. And so I ended up being involved and became a co-founder of our school newspaper when I was in high school, became a co-founder of our debate team when I was in high school, and would debate anybody in my high school on anything. I literally put the word out in my high school. Anybody wants to debate Hugo Morales, please come forward. And somebody actually did do that my senior year.
So I can see you sharpening your skills, your journalism, your debate, your communication, your English, all those things are happening along the way.
And my political skills.
And political, okay.
So I ran for student body president. And the same fellow who was debating me dared to challenge me. And anyway, I won the vote. And I became student body president at this high school.
How'd you end up at Harvard?
Well, I was obviously very ambitious.
Obviously so.
Very ambitious. And I was the only boy in my class who dared to study and actually read and write. Girls usually did that. Some of my best friends got to be girls, which was a lot of fun. So I ended up at Harvard with no girls. It was all male at that class. So I'm class 72 and the only Latino in my class. And so I went on to Harvard Law School and then public radio. But I did radio in college.
So you did some college radio. That kind of planted some of those seeds or took some of your interest and gave a platform for those?
Yeah. At first, I actually got the taste of radio because my brother did the first radio show in Spanish on a country western station, KVRE, in Santa Rosa, which everybody, if you were Latino, listened to. And then on Harvard College, I introduced salsa and merengue and all that to La Hora, which was an hour for Puerto Ricans that I did. On Saturday nights, and then for Mexicans and the other Latinos in the on Sunday nights. So I was there every weekend, tied to the radio on the microphone, and doing the mixing like you're doing now. I produce news, and I produced La Hora. It was just an incredible experience, reaching the whole Boston area, making history, bilingual radio for Latinos.
And what year was it? What year was this?
1970. This is the first in the world. Yeah, run by a Mixteco from Oaxaca. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
With illiterate parents.
This is Beyond the Headlines on KUNR with the Reynolds School Media Watch. I'm David Stipik. Our guest in the studio today is Hugo Morales, co-founder and executive director of Radio Bilingüe, the National Latino Public Radio Network, and he's the diversity fellow in residence at the Reynolds School of Journalism. You founded this radio station. You've gotten through Harvard Law School, correct?
Correct.
But you've also haven't just left those roots behind. You have returned. You've gone back to the fields, to the people that represent your roots. Why is that so important to you?
What happened is, again, throughout Harvard College and then Harvard Law School, I continued to work in the fields, you know, in the summers. And I lived with my family. And, you know, a lot of us, you know, in college go for internships and stuff like that. But what I wanted to do, when I got to Harvard, I realized how unique my history was. And that, wow. When I went to Harvard, the faculty could not get a handle about defining what was poverty. And I lived in poverty. And I thought, wow, what an incredible, incredible experience. And to know there's millions of us in the United States and millions of us in the world. Wow, what a lab. I'm living it. So I thought, you know, why don't we live as long as possible among the poor that I am. I am a poor person. And that's what a privilege. So I actually took advantage, from my vantage point, I took advantage of that and continued to live in the fields to be able to get a sense about, continue to affirm what were sensitivities, the issues, the culture, the aspirations, the dreams, and the camaraderie, the love, culture of poor people.
Among the many awards you've received is the Landon Foundation's Cultural Freedom Prize, and you're also known for your efforts to shine light on freedom and courage and creativity, human rights, and also poverty. I mean, that's a theme as well, that you say that that's a kind of a blessing to be among the poor because there's a richness there.
Definitely, definitely. And you know, when I was at Harvard College, I became a sort of a celebrity because I was the only Latino in my class, and I was a farm worker. I mean, so there were several classmates who would approach me, and grad students wanting to know, well, what it is. I wanted to know more about how do poor people live? How do farm workers live? So I invited many of them to actually come and live with me in the farm labor camp and pick prunes and with me. So about half a dozen did during my undergrad years. So these folks got to come, some, you know, like sons of doctors and so on, who went and helped. We live in the fields to get a sense of that.
Hugo, as you talk with today's journalism students or other young people, what's your message?
Students should follow their dreams. You know, I definitely started Radio Bilingüe with no money, and now we have 6 Foot Power FM, so I'm about to expand another half dozen translators in the next 18 months, and helped about, you know, a dozen small nonprofits start their own low-power radio station. So, hey, you know, like, I follow my dreams. You should follow your dreams. And if you think you have something innovative, why don't you see how you can make it real? So that was the message yesterday. And today, the message is the airwaves belong to the people. Don't feel powerless when it comes to the content that you listen on the radio or television. There is a way to have collective influence. The airwaves belong to the people, and we need to build a better community. And that's what we should do as U.S. citizens.
Give me a quick assessment of how public radio, mainstream public radio in this country is doing in terms of its diversifying its voices, its team, its content, and how does this get better? How do we grow in the public radio world in diversity?
The short answer is that it's not. You know, public radio in English in the United States, it's not. It's, you know, and it's so unfortunate because the demographics are changing. Like in California, if you look at L.A., the majority of the population in L.A. is Latino, but there is no service for Latinos in L.A. And that's true, you know, in so many places. And so public radio has a long, long ways to go. I know there's affirmative efforts to do that, but from my vantage point, there's minuscule progress. And so I'm really hopeful, but we have a long ways to go. And that's why within public broadcast, I know Station Resource Group, Tom Thomas and Jeff Clifford, they wrote a paper some 8 years ago. And I think it's a really good platform on the future of public radio. What they came out and suggested is that the idea of multiple platforms, so that there's a platform, for example, not just for jazz music or classical, but also for Latino programming. And that's where Radio Bilingue fits in and other Latino public radio stations. This platform can be enriched and can be expanded to serve the expanding Latino population. And that at some point, there could be an intersection between the Latino community radio and public radio world and the mainstream.
We're having community conversations right now about this very topic, and it seems the power of public radio is not so much when a name or a personality comes to the station and brings that, but where everyone from every moment of content and creation and thinking and conversation, we ourselves become more diverse in terms of our thinking and our cultural awareness. Is that helpful?
Definitely. I definitely agree with you. But David, one of the first things we need to appreciate, whether it be here at the radio station or any other institution, is the comfort of the conversation about diversity. And I can see it in your face. We've just met that you're sincere. And that's so important to have this sincere, frank, honest conversation. And there's some people who don't lend themselves to that, frankly. But I think you do. And I think it's more of us that lend ourselves, because there's a degree of vulnerability in doing that. And I hope that all of us can feel that safe space. That's so important. I'm also the trustee of the California State University System, which is, as you may know, is the largest university system in the United States. There, we're having that conversation. So whether it be higher education, whether it be philanthropy, another field where I am, I serve on several foundation boards, we need to be comfortable and sincere about having this conversation.
Well, it's definitely an active conversation at this station. I hope we can accomplish more over the coming months and years here. As we wrap up, I want to give you the last word here. Anything to leave with our listeners today?
Well, I just hope that those folks that are listening get a sense that there's changing demographics happening, not just in California, but also Nevada. The state is growing, and Reno's becoming increasingly Latino. And so this is something that, for example, when I came to Fresno back in 1976 to build Radio Bilingue, Fresno was 16% Latino. Right now, very similar to L.A., right now 51% Latino. L.A. is 51% Latino. And that's going to happen here. So I think as the change in demographics has happened, I think we need to be open to that conversation. And also, we need to recognize the importance of education. Education is key, because our public schools, public schools, institutions like this university, are critical factors, critical institutions for this conversation in preparation of not only this generation, but future generations, because it all begins in the early stages of children's lives. You know, I have kids, twin boys, and mixed race. My wife is white. And I have them going to a barrio school with a dual immersion program, Spanish English. And so I want my kids to grow up comfortable with African Americans, with whites, with Asians and Latinos, and with poor people. Eventually, like myself, they're going to have opportunities to go to college. But I think those early years of being exposed to a diverse community really helps. Through that education exposure to diversity, we will definitely build a better Reno and a better Nevada and a better country.
Well, I appreciate those words and encouragement for us as we are working on the same playing field here to broaden and open these doors and welcome all voices to the station. So thank you. This has been the Reynolds School Media Watch on Beyond the Headlines. I'm KUNR General Manager David Stipik. It's been my privilege today to visit with Reynolds School of Journalism's Diversity Fellow in Residence, Hugo Morales. Hugo is the co-founder and executive director of Radio Bilingue. It's the National Latino Public Radio Network. Hugo, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And also thanks to Reynolds School of Journalism Dean Al Stavitsky for introducing this segment and for the partnership that makes these conversations possible. And thank you for listening to KUNR.